Well, hello again, everyone, and welcome. My name is Father Sean O'Manion. I'm the pastor of this parish, Immaculate Conception, also our sister, or increasingly becoming mother parish, Our Lady of Guadalupe, in the Churchill section here in town, town being Holyoke, Massachusetts, for those of us who are listening on our website. Today is January 31st, which means it's the feast of St. John Bosco, known as Don Bosco, as a title given to priests traditionally in Italy. I thought I would talk a little bit about him. Let's see, he did get bumped off because his feast day happened to land on a Sunday, so he cannot compete with the fourth Sunday in ordinary time. So sorry, Giovanni. But he was a priest in Italy, and the reason why I just want to discuss him a little bit, but also, since there are a lot of new faces here today, and again, welcome, I would like to talk a little bit about what the Guard of Honor is and Sacred Heart spirituality in general. It's always good to touch up on these basic subjects anyway. The Guard of Honor, so just to put things in perspective before I go into John Bosco, because the reason why I want to discuss John Bosco isn't just because today is his feast day, or would have been, but because he was very active in the Guard of Honor in his day. He lived in the Diocese of Turin in northern Italy. And the Guard of Honor is roughly contemporaneous with John Bosco. The Guard of Honor was founded in 1863, so just to situate that from our perspective, that would have been right in the middle of our Civil War. It would have been during the reign of the pontificate of Blessed Pius IX. And what else? It was right around that time that the United States was consecrated to the Immaculate Conception. Also, the Massachusetts College of Agriculture, now UMass Amherst, was founded that year as well. That's an important thing for us to know here in our diocese. It's my alma mater, times two. And so anyway, John Bosco we don't know if he was actually a member. He must have been, because he was very active with the Guard of Honor. He contacted the Mother House in France many times, and he insisted that every one of the colleges, of the schools founded by the Salesians of Don Bosco, would have a chapter, or rather a center, as they're called, a center of the Guard of Honor. Also, all the Salesian missionaries that traveled from Italy to Latin America, primarily to set up schools, had the same directive, to found in each school a center of the Guard of Honor. And this would be part of the spirituality of the children. It makes perfect sense, because this order, this congregation that John Bosco founded, and just to help you situate him, he died I think he died in the 1880s, 1890s, and he called them the Salesians, S-A-L-E-S-I-A-N-S. Because what he was purporting to do in this congregation was to preserve the charism of St. Francis de Sales. Francis de Sales was a French-speaking, he was a Savoyard, so he lived in the Duchy of Savoy, which now, I believe, straddles France and Switzerland. And he was a bishop of Geneva at a time when Roman Catholicism was outlawed in Geneva by John Calvin's successors. So Francis de Sales had a very profound spirituality. As a child, he had been educated by the fledgling Society of Jesus, the Jesuit order, and so he had been steeped in Ignatian spirituality. So what he does is that he takes some elements of Ignatian spirituality. By elements of Ignatian spirituality, I mean basically the things that one would encounter in the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. And one of the primary aspects of this spirituality is to make to be very aware of one's conscience and to do regular, once a day, twice a day, regular checkup appraisals, you know, examines of conscience, not only looking for sins, but looking for everything, just to trying to get a well-informed, you know, trying to get well-informed intelligence, so to speak, on our day-to-day circumstances, and to look for the hand of God in our daily events, both big and small. So he takes these elements of Ignatian spirituality and he adapts them for everyone. Now, St. Ignatius had written his exercises not just for the Jesuits, but for everyone, because actually the spiritual exercises predate the founding of the Jesuit order. They even predate the priestly ordination of Ignatius of Loyola, which got him into some trouble with the Spanish Inquisition. But what Francis de Sales does is that he takes these elements and he puts them together with insights of his own in a book called The Introduction to the Devout Life. Sometimes it's called The Introduction, sometimes it's called An Introduction. But in French, it's l'introduction, it's the introduction to the devout life. And what that is, it's a spiritual handbook for lay people. Basically, what he is encouraging people to do is saying, look, you have to let go of the notion that holiness is just for nuns and for popes and bishops and priests. It's for everybody. So he's saying, you know, the carpenter's workshop is very much a place where holiness can be attained. Likewise, the lawyer's office, a house that has to be cleaned, etc. These are all places where we can grow in holiness and we can offer our work to God. He was pretty much ahead of his time with this notion because we're talking the early 1600s here. And this is something that will be taken up again quite vividly in the first half of the 20th century by Saint José María Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei in Spain. The whole thrust of Opus Dei is the sanctification of one's daily work. Then, of course, we see this crystallized, so to speak, in Vatican II. Among the teachings of Vatican II is the renewal of the universal call to holiness, that every man, woman, and child is called to be holy in whatever vocation they have received, whether that be a vocation to priesthood, a vocation to the married life, whatever, or just a vocation to be a kid. We are all called to holiness. So Salesian spirituality, meaning the spirituality of St. Francis de Sales, is very much concerned with that, with developing a spirituality that is accessible to the common folk. Now, Francis de Sales, there are several religious orders, congregations that bear his name, but he didn't found any of those. He did, however, found one religious order called the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary. And that is an organization, it's an order of some 200 plus monasteries throughout the world, an order of cloistered women. We have one such cloister here in Berkshire County, in a little village called Tyringham, not far from the Divine Mercy shrine. There are about 16 or 17 women living in cloister there, but the monastery is open to the public, and they have daily mass there if you feel like heading out early in the morning. They have daily mass at 7:45 a.m., and that is open to the general public as well. They also have a little gift shop where they sell their handicrafts, that sort of thing, as a part of, you know, subsidizing their income. So that order of cloistered women was founded by St. Francis de Sales together with St. Jane Frances de Chantal, the Order of the Visitation of Holy Mary. It was founded in the year 1610, and it was founded on the day June 6th. And those of you who know World War II history, know that June 6th is a very important date for the French. It is, of course, D-Day. It is the day when the Allies invaded Normandy in an attempt, which eventually proved successful, to drive the Germans out of there and eventually back into Germany. These dates don't happen by coincidence. Originally, D-Day was supposed to have happened on June 5th, but there was fog, so they had to cancel it, and so they went in on June the 6th. I think clearly the idea for that is because God wanted the invasion to coincide with the anniversary of the foundation of the Order of the Visitation. So, but be that as it may, the Order of the Visitation is founded by Francis de Sales. And so even though they are a cloistered order, they promote this spirituality of the heart, a spirituality to live holiness, to live Jesus, as they say, in their daily events. The order is founded in 1610. So if we fast forward some 63 years to 1673, one of these nuns, Margaret Mary Alacoque, receives these visions, these apparitions from Jesus Christ. And they culminate 2 years later in 1675, when we have what's called the Grand Apparition, where Jesus, as we see in that statue to my right, and for those who are listening to us, it's just a statue of the Sacred Heart with the typical white and red robes and the heart of flesh exposed. That is what she sees, and he says to her, "Behold this heart which has loved men so much and received in return little more than indifference, coldness," in other words, people not caring, forget about love. And so then he turns to her and he says, "Well, at least you, Marguerite Marie, you can love me back." And so he is speaking to all of us through her. The spirituality of the Sacred Heart is a spirituality of making amends. It's a spirituality of reparation. It's a spirituality of saying to Jesus, "Jesus, I'm very sorry. I'm sorry for the indifference of mankind, but I am especially sorry for my own indifference, my own stubbornness, my own coldness and hardness of heart." So that is what we try to do. We try to make amends to Jesus through the practice of this spirituality, which he himself suggested to Margaret Mary Alacoque, and which eventually flourished. First, it was approved in her order after a lot of rejection, criticism, and ridicule. It was accepted in her monastery, then in her order, then in France, and then finally, in the mid-1800s, again, Pope Pius IX, he approved it for universal use, and he did what Jesus had requested. He institutes the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart of Jesus in the Roman calendar, a special mass, a new feast day. So all these things happen, and then around that same time, in another monastery of the Visitation, in a little city called Bourges, B-O-U-R-G-E-S, is founded the Guard of Honor by a sister named Marie of the Sacred Heart Bernaud, B-E-R-N-A-U-D. We have one photograph of her, that's it. She was a little on the chubby side, wearing, those round spectacles that they used to wear in the 1800s, kind of a jovial looking woman. She was, I understand, a delayed vocation. She entered older. I don't know if she had been a widow or what. The foundress, by the way, St. Jane Frances de Chantal, who founded the order together with Francis de Sales, was a widow. And she founds the Guard of Honor in an attempt to respond to Jesus, to make amends to Jesus, to make reparation to the crucified one. And she receives this inspiration while meditating on the Psalms, in particular Psalm 69, where Jesus is crucified, and it's the one where he says, "In my thirst they gave me gall, they gave me vinegar to drink," depending on the on the translation, and we see 1,000 years later those same things play themselves out on Mount Calvary when Jesus dies. So for Marie of the Sacred Heart, that voice of the psalmist is not the voice of King David, that is the voice of Jesus Christ, who is the Lord of time, and so he is speaking to us 1,000 years before the incarnation through these psalms, which is the way that we read these psalms, because we read the entire Old Testament through a Christocentric lens. We see Christ everywhere. We see in all of the stories, you know, of Noah's Ark, or, you know, it's an image of the church, of Peter's bark, you know. We see, you know, the story of David, the stories of King Solomon. We see elements, different facets, different bits of the life of Jesus. And then when Jesus arrives on the scene, he encloses within himself and within his whole life all these different elements, and of course, a lot more. The lives of not only the men, but of also the holy women of the Old Testament. So this is founded in 1863, and it grows very, very quickly. The woman who helped Sister Marie was a lay woman who later on became a religious, and she was murdered for the faith. She's a martyr. She was shot dead by an anarchist in the late 1800s. And so we already have, we have an organization here that is approved by the Vatican, is enriched with many indulgences, plenary indulgences that we can get on certain dates and under the proper circumstances. But we also have quite a stellar list of people who have belonged to this Association of the Faithful, who are blessed, who are saints. We have, well, in recent times, we have Saint John Paul the Great. He was a member of the Guard of Honor, and he kept his hour of guard from 12 noon to 1 p.m. every single day. All the popes from Pius the Ninth to Pius the Twelfth, so that would have been Blessed Pius the Ninth, Leo the Thirteenth, Saint Pius the Tenth, Benedict the Fifteenth, Pius the Eleventh, Pius the Twelfth. All those seven popes were members of the Guard of Honor. Saints, John Bosco. We believe that the Martin family were all members, because you'll remember that Léonie, the oldest of the Martin sisters, was the only one who did not enter the Carmel. You know, Thérèse entered the Carmel, Céline entered the Carmel, but Léonie, the oldest, and I think she was the first one to enter religious life, she entered the Visitation in Caen, in Normandy, actually. And but because of the ravages of the war, etc., during the Normandy invasion, a lot of the records were lost, and so we don't know for certain that the Martins belonged to the Guard of Honor, but it would have been very surprising if they didn't. Likewise with John Bosco, we do not have records of his enrollment, but like I said, he was in contact with the Mother House in Bourg-en-Bresse, with Sister Maria the Sacred Heart herself, and he made it a requirement that all of his schools have a center of the Guard of Honor in them. And it makes perfect sense, because he was steeped in the spirituality of the founder of the Visitation, of St. Francis de Sales. That's why he called his congregation the Salesians. Today they're known as the Salesians of Don Bosco, and they use the initials SDB at the end of their names. It's a spirituality that is very practical, and that it helps. It's about teaching kids in schools, teaching them, of course, having excellency as a standard, as a basic standard for their academic development, but also teaching them holiness and teaching them something which has become quite rare in today's society, common sense. You know, teaching them to discern evil spirits from good spirits, a very Ignatian concept. But teaching them a bit of common sense. I don't know if you know who Robert Ritchie is. He's the director of America Needs Fatima. And it's an organization that I recommend that you all look up on the internet if you have a chance to. I met him once. He came out to talk in Western Mass a few years ago. But on his website, I found something that I thought was very, very interesting. And so just bear with me here. He had a list of tips from Don Bosco, a list of tips that we can use to grow, like I said, in holiness, but also to grow in a little bit of day-to-day common sense. I put the phone in airplane mode so I could record this for the website, so I had to switch it back on now to look at this at the website, so hopefully no one will call me. So here they are, six prescriptions, he calls them. Prescriptions are like medical prescriptions. Number one, give God the greatest possible glory and honor him with your whole soul. If you have a sin on your conscience, remove it as soon as possible by means of a good confession. Number two, never offend anyone. Above all, be willing to serve others. Be more demanding of yourself than of others. Number three, do not trust those who have no faith in God and who do not obey his precepts. Those who have no scruples in offending God and who do not give him what they should will have many fewer scruples in offending you and even betraying you when it is convenient for them. So these are good teachings that he's giving his kids in the schools. Number four, if you do not wish to be ruined, never spend more than you earn. You should bear this in mind and always measure your true possibilities accurately. Number five, be humble. Be humble. Speak little of yourself and never praise yourself before anyone. He who praises himself, even if he has real merit, risks losing the good opinion of others. He who seeks only praise and honors is sure to have an empty head fed only by wind, when he will have no peace of soul and will be unreliable in his undertakings. Number six, carry your cross on your back and take it as it comes, small or large, whether from friends or enemies, and of whatever wood it be made. The most intelligent and happiest of men is he who, knowing that he is doomed to carry the cross throughout life, willingly and resignedly accepts the one God sends him. And then he concludes, "Dear friend, I am a man who loves joy and who, therefore, wishes to see you and everybody happy. If you do as I say, you will be joyful and glad in heart." So we thank America Needs Fatima. Their website is americaneedsfatima.org. And they work a lot on and helping out American families recover a home-based spirituality. So you may want to check them out. I highly recommend them. So bear with me for 1 second. Good. So there were no untimely phone calls. I'm not as popular as I like to think I am. I'm trying to follow Don Bosco's advice here and not speak highly of myself. But Don Bosco is obviously one of the great saints of our church, and really a saint whose intercession we could and should turn to today, especially here in the city of Holyoke, where we have so many kids. You know, I don't know statistics, but I would say that the rate of birth is higher in Holyoke than it is in the average, you know, suburb of Western Massachusetts. We have a lot of kids here, and you know, what do they do? You know, we have CYO basketball at Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is great, you know, and there are a lot of basketball courts here and there, but by and large, you know, these kids need prayer, because, you know, these problems, politicians try to solve them by throwing money at these problems, and I don't mean to be cynical about it. It's probably done with a good heart, but money is not the solution to everything. I grew up in Mexico, a third world nation, and I went to a school that would be a joke by American standards. It was basically a house that the rooms had been turned into classrooms. It had didn't have a track and field and swimming pool. I mean, we were lucky if we had, running water in the sinks. But, we had good teachers. And as long as you put something into it, you got what you invested in. I got a pretty decent education. It's money is not the solution to better education. The malaise, I think, isn't so much sociological as it is spiritual. And we really need to pray for our youth, and we need to pray for educational institutions, for teachers, etc. And that actually happens to be the intention for my hour of guard, which is from 4 to 5 p.m. It's for educational institutions and for teachers and students. It's important for us to keep this in mind. And the power of prayer is one that, people ridicule, but we know, all of us know how powerful prayer is, otherwise we wouldn't be here this afternoon. So John Bosco made the guard of honor required in his schools, both in Italy and throughout Latin America. The guard of honor, for those of you who are not familiar with it, is I think I still have some enrollment pamphlets on that little table to the right of the exit there. It's a spirituality that is very Salesian. It's about living a life of holiness, even if we only do it for 1 hour. But 1 hour is a start. It's not reasonable, and it's not practical or even likely to succeed if I get up one morning and be like, well, today I'm going to live a life of holiness and I'm going to dedicate this day to the Lord. Yeah, it's a good purpose, but you know what? Chances are that we're going to be distracted at the first thing that goes wrong. We need to start in small increments. And I think that the Guard of Honor offers just that. What I do myself is I signed up for an hour, I prayed over it to see which hour it would be, and it was 4 to 5. The patrons of that hour are the cherubim, and the intention is education in all its different, aspects. And I offer that hour, it's the same hour every day from 4 to 5 p.m., and it does not bind under sin, so if I forget, it's no big deal. It's a free will offering. And, it's a really good deal because I can get benefits from this. I can get even indulgences from the Guard of Honor, but I'm not bound by sin. I'm not bound by any duty to God. So when 4 o'clock rolls up, wherever I'm doing, when 4 o'clock shows up, if I'm here giving a talk, if I'm driving my car, if I'm watching TV, if I'm taking a bath, whatever, I just offer that hour to Jesus on the cross, the one who was rejected and abandoned by his closest, with the exception of John, the beloved disciple, the one who, instead of water, was given gall or vinegar to drink, and everything else that was done to him. And then, having died, his side is thrust by the spear, it is pierced, and out of it come blood and water, our sacraments. For the ancient bishop and doctor of the church, John Chrysostom, for him, that was the true birth of the church, not Pentecost, weeks later. But for him, he said the church was born when the side of the crucified Christ was pierced and water and blood gushed out from that wound, and we received right then and there the sacraments of our church, the physical, tangible means of our salvation. John Bosco was very much steeped in this tradition. And I think that we could ask for his intercession for the kids of our society, of our city, the kids of our families, but also for all of us, that we can apply common sense, that we can discern good from evil, and that we can take baby steps in growing in holiness. So I do that hour from 4 to 5. And, you know, there is a formal prayer that I can say if I can, if I'm not driving my car, and I keep it on my iPhone or in a little booklet. I don't have to say that prayer. Usually I don't. Usually I just kind of make the sign of the cross and say, okay, Jesus, I'm with you. Using my imagination, I place myself I place myself at the foot of the cross. Excuse me. No water. I place myself at the foot of the cross, and what I do is I just accompany Jesus and I comfort him. Responding to that cry in the Psalms, I sought for comforters but found none. It's like, I'm here, Jesus, and I'm with you. And you might think that that's just a sappy, sentimental thing, but it's not. God gave us our imagination. You know, God gave us, oh, thank you very much. All right, we got water angels. Yes. Our imaginations were given to us by God, and we could use them just like we can use the internet. We can use it for ill, or we can use it for good. And time and space are dimensions of God's creation. God is the creator of these dimensions. He is not bound by them. He chose to be bound by them when he became incarnate. But now in his glorified body, he is not bound by them. And even when he became incarnate, he let go of divine prerogatives, as St. Paul tells us, but he never never lost his divine identity, because you cannot separate the divine from the human nature of Jesus. They're inseparable. So everything that Jesus did and said for those 33 years approximately that he was here on planet Earth in human form, everything he did and said is not something that is relegated to the history books, you know, like Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate is dead. Julius Caesar is dead. Augustus and Tiberius Caesars are dead. Jesus is not. Jesus, unlike Tiberius, Augustus, and Julius, and Pontius Pilate, who are only human, Jesus was human, but he is also God. And in his life, we have an intersection, just like in the Holy Eucharist, we have an intersection of the divine, of time and space and eternity. In the life of Jesus, we have that same intersection. So everything that happened in Jesus' life continues to be present in eternal reality, in the eternal present, the eternal now, what we call heaven. So if I have a devotion to the child Jesus, like the infant of Prague, for example, I'm not waxing sentimental. Oh, cute little baby Jesus. No, it's because the baby Jesus continues to be a reality. The crucifixion continues to be a reality. And so I can make myself very really present at the foot of his cross, because his crucifixion continues to be a reality in a way that we cannot understand in the eternal now. And I can make myself present there through prayer, through the action of the Holy Spirit, make myself present and offer comfort to my crucified Lord. So that's what I seek to do for 1 hour, from 4 to 5, and I offer it up. Whatever comes during that hour, whatever I'm doing, I try to do my best, and I try to do it for him. An act of reparation, making amends. So that's what we try to accomplish in the Guard of Honor. So I would recommend that all of you hopefully will avail yourselves of this beautiful and yet extremely simple spirituality. Also, you know, once you learn more about it, we have a website, by the way. It's guardofhonor-usa, Guard of Honor, just one continual string of words, guardofhonor-usa.org. You can visit that and learn more about it. And, you know, maybe mention it to any family members or friends you may have who may have left the faith. Because this commitment doesn't require them to go to a chapel or to Mass or anything. All they're doing is offering this 1 hour every day, and they just offer the activities without even changing the activities of that hour. It's very simple, but it's very powerful, because our God has chosen to come to us in simple ways, and so he invites us to return to him in simple ways. And if we do start this practice, you know that Jesus isn't just going to sit back and say, oh, well, that's good. No, he's going to rope us in. So I would, you may want to check it out. I hope I have some booklets left on that table. Don't have very good eyesight. But if not, you can try our website. Again, www.guardofhonor-usa, guardofhonor-usa.org. Well, enjoy everyone this would-be feast of St. John Bosco. And God bless you, everyone.